This is Salman Rushdie.
Hi, this is Julia Sweeney.
I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson.
This is Theo Wilson.
Hi, this is Dar Williams, and you're listening to the
Humanist Network
Humanist
News.
Network
Humanist
News.
Network Humanist News. Network News.
It's June 23rd, and you're listening to the Humanist Network News, an audio production by the American Humanist Association. I'm your host, Jess Constantine. I am podcasting live from Albany, New York. Listeners, it's been a busy month for me. I did some traveling out west. I went to California to the American Humanist Association's 69th annual conference in San Jose, California. And I've got some great footage to play for you over the next few months. We'll be hearing about the LGBT Humanist Council and what's happening with that movement. We'll be hearing a little bit about religion and as it pertains to the sports world, in particular to professional male athletes. We'll have a quick update for you on Mr. Deity, as well as play a couple snippets from the presentation that he did. We're going to hear from our two humanist heroines, one of which is Meg Bauman, who is the co-chair of AHA's Feminist Caucus. We're also going to hear from Anne Laurie Gaylor, who is the co-president of the Freedom from Religion Foundation, and she's going to tell us about how her organization took part in getting that ruling that the National Day of Prayer was indeed unconstitutional. And of course, we'll hear from our humanist of the year, Mr. Bill Nye, the science guy. So stay tuned over the next few months for all that stuff. This month, we have Wendy Liu, who won the Humanist Pioneer Award at the American Humanist Conference. Wendy Liu is a Seattle-based writer for the American Chronicle, which is an online magazine for national and international news. And she has a book out called Everything I Understand About America, I Learned in Chinese Proverbs. And that was published in 2009. So here's that clip of Wendy accepting the Humanist Pioneer Award at AHA's 69th Annual Conference. First, you're going to hear Royce Beckhart introducing Mr. Jim Simpson, who will tell you a little bit more about Wendy, and finally, Wendy's actual acceptance speech. So here's that clip.
Here to introduce our Humanist Pioneer Award is Dr. James Simpson. He is an agricultural economist specializing in world food and livestock issues. He teaches at the Thomas S. Foley Institute for Public Policy and Public Service at Washington State University, and he's professor emeritus at universities in Florida and Japan. A world traveler, Dr. Simpson's work has spanned dozens of nations with a special focus on China. At last count, he's the author of 9 books and some 400 articles and monographs and chapters, and has presented papers in numerous national and international conferences. Dr. Simpson's also a founding member and continuing trustee of the Humanist Foundation. That's the AHA's endowment fund, for those of you not aware. Through the Humanist Foundation, humanists have a chance to donate a principle that will be kept in perpetuity, earning vital interest and dividends for the growth and development of humanism. I'd like to welcome Jim.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here. You know, sometimes we get lucky. That happened to me a few years ago when I read an op-ed article by Wen Liu in the Seattle Times about China, a country that I've been privileged to work in extensively over the last 25 years. Wendy, as she is known outside her native China, grew up during the turbulent years of Chairman Mao's Cultural Revolution. Her stories and references to that period are not only fascinating, but also gist for much of her writing. She received a BA in English at Xi'an Foreign Languages Institute. After working in China's foreign affairs, providentially, she came to work for the delegation of Vice President Walter Mondale, visiting Xi'an in 1979. Walter Mondale is the younger brother of Lester Mondale. And Lester Mondale is one of the three founders, headed by Lyle Simpson, of the Humanist Foundation. Now you understand why I use the word providentially. After that, she enrolled in the Beijing Institute of International Relations. Unfortunately, she was criticized for her bourgeoisie openness, analytical thinking, and independent nature that now characterize her refreshing opinions and publications. That incident led her to prematurely abandoning the Beijing Institute of International Relations MA program. She then enrolled in the Georgia Institute of Technology in Atlanta, Georgia, where she received an MS degree in technology and science policy in 1988. From there, she morphed into a career as an independent business consultant on China, and finally into her real calling as a writer and translator. Wendy has particularly focused her four books and myriad articles on relations and relationships between her mother country, China, and what might be termed her father country, the United States, of which she became a citizen in 1999. Her uniqueness lies in the analytical, introspective, thoughtful, and often humorous approach to her topic that characterizes the outstanding, or at least my favorite, writers on contemporary topics. Wen Liu certainly has zeal for her writing. It was through her 2009 book, fortunately for sale out in the hall, Everything I Understand About America I Learned in Chinese Proverbs, published by Homa and Seiki Books, that I discovered she really is what we popularly term a pioneer, because her innovative method of using proverbs may constitute a new approach in the academic sub-discipline known as intercultural communication. It was also through that relatively short book packed with very readable yet instructive chapters that I made another discovery about her innate secular humanism. Like many of us, despite an eclectic study interest, she did not know there was such a thing as secular humanism, or that it may actually constitute a central position in her philosophical thought. At least that is what I think. Let's see what she has to say. Please welcome Wendy Liu, Humanist Pioneer for 2010.
First of all, I would like to thank Jim, or can I say just once, Jim, Professor Simpson, for an introduction I hope I will be able to live up to, at least in the next 20 minutes. And I also would like to thank Mr. Speckhart and the American Humanist Association for having me at the conference and giving me such honor, the Humanist Pioneer Award. As Jim said, sometimes we get lucky. He was right. I certainly did. When I was writing those essays in the book Jim mentioned, especially where I talked about being an atheist, I was pretty lonely an atheist. I did not have any knowledge about AHA. And then I got to know Jim. And through Jim, this great organization. And now you, my new friend. I guess I said yes to the award, mostly so I could be here today. And for free. Not that I thought I deserved it. I did indeed seriously wondered and still wondering if AHA was not making a mistake offering me this award or any award. In a phone conversation early on with Lindsay, she was informing me about the organization and the award, and somehow we touched upon how she got involved in AHA. And she told me that she came from a religious family and came to have doubts, etc. And then I realized that that was probably the case with many of you. To be an atheist, you had to turn against the religion you were brought up in. But I didn't do any of that. I was brought up an atheist. I had always been an atheist. How would I fit in with this group? Not to say fit the award. I was thinking hard about it because I really needed to convince myself I even belonged. Then it occurred to me, oh yeah, I may have also grown up with a religion and have come to have doubts, except that it was a different kind of religion, a political religion, a Mao religion, or the religion of Mao Zedong, Chairman Mao, who for three decades was China's dictator and the head of the ruling Communist Party. You probably have heard about China's Cultural Revolution, Jim just mentioned, that happened in the 1960s and the 1970s. It was a revolution not just against China's traditional culture, but everything from Confucianism to free market capitalism, from Soviet revisionism to American imperialism. It established the Mao Zedong thought, the Chinese version of Marxism, as the guiding theory for China. And Mao himself, of course, launched this revolution and directed this revolution because he believed that China was not socialist enough and that he had enemies inside the party and the country who would try to turn China into a capitalist country. Well, China is now becoming a capitalist country, but it's that's a different story. With Mao as the absolute leader, the Cultural Revolution felt more like a religious and a cult movement than a political or cultural one. Mao was omnipresent. His portrait was everywhere, in offices, classrooms, homes, and his statue was everywhere too, in public squares, in front of government buildings, factories, schools. And Mao was omnipotent. He started and ended one after another nationwide political movements, or turned upside down millions of people's lives on a whim. And he decided who were comrades and who were enemies, who should stay and who should go. And Mao was also omniscient. Whatever he said was the truth and the supreme instruction, and that had to be followed to the letter or character in the case of Chinese language, whether you understanding it or not. And the one word by Mao was said to be worth 10,000 by the rest. So in fact, Mao became a god, and his quotation book, the little red book that everyone had to have a copy, a Bible, and he's worshiping a religion. He was described as the savior of the Chinese nation, the reddest sun in people's heart, and mentioned as a great leader, great teacher, great commander, and great helmsman. So when you have a god, you will have a ritual, and we did. In those years, for instance, people, meaning everybody, workers, students, shop clerks, would stand in front of a Mao portrait in the morning, asking for guidance for the day. And then in the evening, reporting their day or asking for forgiveness for any behavior or thought that might have not been up to the chairman's teachings or expectations. And at the middle school I attended, for instance, there was a huge Mao painting at the entrance, and we students arriving in the morning would stop in front of it. And there was always a teacher or a student leading the service. A quotation of Mao's would be read aloud and followed, and the wishes for Mao's long, long life were expressed, etc. And many people were truly devout, often overcome by emotion for Mao. One classmate fainted during an extended session of this kind in the classroom while telling us how she had unworthy thought the previous day. But others were not so devout. One day, the teacher was checking before class. He would walk through the desk, see if everybody had their Mao's little red book with them. But somehow, I didn't have my copy that day. And I didn't have an excuse. So I said, I'm sorry, but I really carried Chairman Mao's teachings in my heart. And fortunately for me, the teacher was pretty lenient, so I was okay. And the ritual, of course, was performed in many ways, especially in terms of Mao's quotations. Those quotations were put in songs and broadcast over loudspeakers, sung at the gatherings, and of course, written in big posters or directly on the walls, just everywhere. And also, in those years, if we had any meetings, and when somebody spoke at the meetings, they had to start with, "Great leader Chairman Mao said this or that." Then you go on. And of course, we all learned many of Mao's quotations by heart, and we also learned how to apply them to everyday situation, and also against each other. even after I started college, we still started a class every day with a Mao quotation written on the blackboard. Of course, translated now into English for the sake of English majors. And with such religion-like practice, the Chinese also suffered religion-like persecution. If one person was labeled a counter-revolutionary, his family became a counter-revolutionary family, and children, counter-revolutionary children. And they suffered discrimination in terms of jobs, education, and housing. Many, many families, including my own, experienced this fate. And at the same time, you can imagine, with this kind of religion, or this kind of political religion, life could also become ridiculous in many ways, or religulous, as Bill Maher's documentary suggested. While there may not be a ridiculous kind of documentary about the Cultural Revolution, but there were a number of collections of Cultural Revolutionary jokes. And they were not really jokes. They were just really ridiculous life stories. I have to say that it must be the undefeatable and forever optimistic human spirit, or humanist spirit, that the Chinese still could find ways to laugh about their traumatic Cultural Revolution experience. And I can give you an example of those stories. A man was riding home on his bike after work, and saw a sign in front of a store that said, "New arrival, glow-in-the-dark Mao bust for sale." And he decided to go in and get one for his home. And in those days, not like now, everything is so overpackaged. There was no packaging, no shopping bag for the Mao bust. So the poor guy had just bare hands and a bare bike. So he found himself a piece of string. Where could you tie a bust? Not around the neck. That's what he did. And worse, he then hung the bust on the handlebar. By that, he committed a crime, insulting Mao image. And people saw it, stopped, and reported him. He was taken away, labeled as an active counter-revolutionary. And it was very easy to commit a crime like that in those days. We have Mao everywhere. For instance, if you try to put a newspaper clipping of a Mao picture on the wall, you accidentally push the thumbtacks too close to the likeness of the chairman, and you might be a counter-revolutionary. If you dropped a Mao pin, you know, unfortunately, into the toilet, you might have to dig up the whole place to find it. There are many, many really silly and sad stories. Anyway, after recalling such Cultural Revolutionary experience that I had lived through in my youth, I convinced myself that, oh yes, I did grow up with a religion, one that was even more pervasive and tyrannical than a regular religion, and did come to have doubts, and did later become a non-believer or humanist, worshiping no one, political god or religious god, and that I did belong. Before I end, I would like to mention that today, June 4th, is the 21st anniversary of the crackdown of the Tiananmen demonstration in Beijing in 1989. China is much freer now, freer than when I was growing up, and freer than 1989, but still not free enough to commemorate Tiananmen in public if you want. It may not require an effort to be a free thinker in China. It still does, to express all your free thoughts. Let's enjoy and celebrate ours. Thank you very much.
That was Wendy Liu accepting the Humanist Pioneer Award at the AHA 69th Annual Conference earlier this month in San Jose, California. And Wendy was gracious enough to answer a couple questions from folks that were at the reception. So here's a clip of those questions.
What you experienced with Mao from where you were as a youth, did you have any inkling at all that at the higher levels of government, when Mao's economic reforms didn't work and there were a lot of forces in government actually against him at the end, was there any inkling of that down on the ground?
Well, I was not aware of economic reforms that Mao was trying to carry out. It was at the end of the Cultural Revolution, 1976, that the Chinese government came out with this program called the Four Modernizations. The four, the industrial, agriculture, science, technology, and defense. That's the four modernizations. So the economic reforms really started after the Cultural Revolution, and Mao passed away before that.
Wendy, thank you very much. I've always considered communism to be a political religion, and your story highlighted the reasons for that. It's widely known by demographers that about 30 million people, 30 million Chinese, died during Mao's programs because of his ideas. Do you think that China will ever become aware of that evil fact?
Well, the Chinese are, I think they're pretty aware of that fact. And in fact, the government with the party had to end the Cultural Revolution because it was so traumatic, so unpopular, so hated by the Chinese. So the party did respond to the popular thinking. And the Chinese were really tired of the endless revolution going on for 10 years and more. And they are aware of the misfortune the Cultural Revolution caused China.
Must have been quite an adventure, to put it mildly, for you. So where do you guess China will be 10 years from now in terms of Mao and communism and becoming capitalism today, the direction it's heading? What do you see it as a system 10 years from now?
Well, I'm not a political scientist, but I would try. Well, there's been some discussion as many of you are aware, that the Communist Party now is only communist in name. They have new laws protecting private property written in Chinese constitution. So communism means no private property. Now they promote private ownership, free market, so they're not communist anymore, except they're still authoritarian. And in 10 years, I can say, according to one Chinese expert in the field, he predicted that the Communist Party would probably change name. Maybe they would become Chinese Socialist Party or some different name, because they're not really making a communist revolution anymore.
Those were some questions answered by humanist pioneer Wendy Liu on the first night of AHA's 69th annual conference. After the awards reception, we caught up with Dr. Jim Simpson and got him to ask Wendy Liu a couple questions about the night receiving this award, and also about her book, which you'll hear more in the following interview clip.
Wendy Liu, you did an outstanding job this evening at the 69th annual meeting of the American Humanist Association, to the extent that you received a standing ovation.
I'm happy the speech was well accepted. I wasn't sure if I could speak to this association, because I was not experienced. I'm new in humanist group, and I was just trying to relate to the group. People would say, how did you get involved with the HA? So that's how I came to think I should tell some story that has something to do with the religion or political religion, and how to become a non-religion, non-believer. That's just my way to relate to the group.
One of the interesting things I heard was that when you received the notification about receiving the Humanist Pioneer of 2010 award, you asked, just exactly what is a pioneer? And you said, you know, in China, I was in the Young Pioneers, a children's. Is there some big difference between the Little Red Guards or the those kind of pioneers and what the AHA thinks in terms of a pioneer?
Well, I did say that because I was a member of the Communist Young Pioneers. That was a affiliated organization for the Communist Party. You have the Communist Party at the top, then you have the Communist Youth League for young people, and then for the younger ones in elementary school, we had the Communist Young Pioneers. So you kind of grow from Young Pioneer to Communist Youth League, and then if you are good, then you get into the party. So I was a Young Pioneer, and that's why I said, what did I do to become a Humanist Pioneer? But I realized that the association recognized how I experienced a religion a different way, and how I became a non-believer or humanist in a different route.
Well, Wendy, you certainly are a pioneer in the popular sense of the word as we generally use it in America, the people who cross frontiers to new locations and new vistas and new ideas. The book that you just recently published and we're signing here this evening by the large numbers, Everything I Understand About America I Learned in Chinese Proverbs. It seems to me, at least, that it is a path-breaking book in intercultural communication. How do you feel about that?
Well, there have been a lot of books written by Chinese authors or Chinese American authors, and a lot of them were about the miseries of the Cultural Revolution or the life of their own families during the Cultural Revolution. I thought that, well, people have learned enough about that, and I would like to write something different. I would like to relate my Chinese experience and understand it differently. So I decided to talk about America through a Chinese angle. I love the Chinese proverbs. They provide the best angles, the best hooks to, you know, to handle issues on. So I thought, well, I'm just going to use the proverb. So I used 39 proverbs or sayings to talk about 39 issues or experiences.
Well, you certainly did an outstanding job this evening, and you certainly did an outstanding job in that book. And we're all thrilled that you're now, I believe, a committed humanist. Thank you very much, Wendy Liu.
Thank you.
That was Jim Simpson and Wendy Liu, who is the AHA's 2010 Humanist Pioneer Award recipient. If you're interested in learning more about Wendy's book, Everything I Understand About America I Learned in Chinese Proverbs, you can purchase that book on Amazon.com. You can also learn more about it at Homa in Seki Books, which is homabooks.com. That's HOMA books.com. I'll have links to all of these on our podcast show notes page, which is AmericanHumanist.org. While you're on that page, you can feel free to listen to and download any previous episode. You can also read all of those show notes from past episodes. On the weeks when HNN is not putting out a podcast, we are putting out an e-zine, so please feel free to read up on that at AmericanHumanist.org/HNN or HumanistNetworkNews.org. As always, I'd love your feedback. I'd love to have any suggestions on future shows or future guests or anything like that. So please send me an email at hnn@AmericanHumanist.org. You can also find that letter to the producer link on our podcast page, humanistpodcast.org. That about wraps up my show for this month. Don't forget, lots of great conference content coming to you in the summer months coming up, Mr. Deity, sports and religion. I'm also hoping to have a guest speak about sports and evolution. And of course, our Humanist of the Year, Bill Nye, the Science Guy. Thank you for listening to the Humanist Network News, an audio production by the American Humanist Association. I'm your host, Jess Constantine.